Come in. Is that all tight?
Mm-hmm, that's okay. Good start.
Thank you.
Thank you. So the last one.
Okay.
Making a decent of your time?
Yes.
We can edit.
Okay.
Let's see, I would like to start with just a, since it hadn't been transcribed yet, Mr. Armstrong's comment in here about the mill, how it came up in the conversation, and we talked about a sawmill or a mill that a Mr. Apple operated just above him, called him Grandpa Apple. And then he mentioned Thompson's old mill was a grist mill. I don't know, all I know is what I've been told. And I asked, are there still Thompsons living around here? He said, no, they're all gone, all dead. Ed Johnson owns that old mill track over there, Thompson's Mill, your professor down there at Chapel Hill. Do you know him? I said, I know who he is. He's a good friend of mine. Old Ed's a good one. I think a lot of Ed Johnson. Where you came into it to begin with. And then, as I finished the conversation with him, he wished me to convey a message, and I will do that. We were just finishing up the effects right on the end of the other side of the tape. Well, when do you reckon you'll see old Ed? I said, probably sometime this week. You tell him, I said, I think about him a lot of times, and if he gets a chance to come and see me.
Okay, that's a good message. I like to go see Coy, and I haven't seen him probably in a year or so. So I'll go pay him a visit, if I can remember how to get there, which may be a little tricky.
He's out not very far off the Mebane Oaks Road.
Yeah, remember it's a left off the Mebane Oaks Road. It's on a dirt road?
It's paved. There's a cinder block. I think it, it might be. Isn't that funny? I would have said it was paved. I think it's the old Hillsboro Road where it crosses. There's a cinder block building on this front corner here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think another small, like, store, abandoned store on this corner. Other than that, I think it's open. And it's the left, and I think it's the first White House. There's a couple of houses, but I think it's the first White House.
And then take a right and go back to his trailer. Yes, I can...
There's a bunch of mailboxes on this side here, and he would like to see you. I would like very much to get out there very soon, talk to him again, just generally about a lot of things. Generous with his information. Do you recall the very first time that you ever met him?
I can't, I've been trying to remember when it was I first met him, and I can't pin it down, but I would say that it was probably after the King Creek controversy erupted in the fall of 76, so I probably met him later on in the fall of 76, or maybe early 77.
And you, how long had you lived out there? How long have you lived in the King Creek?
At that point, I had been out there maybe 4 years, 3 years.
Did you know of him?
I guess I had heard the name mentioned, and people thought he was a colorful old character, and I was curious, but and I knew vaguely where he lived, but that was all.
When you first became aware of exactly who he was or your interaction, was it through the involvement with, say, the CCCA, or?
Yes. There were not many landowners in the Cane Creek area who would actually have their home sites condemned. And Coy's was one of the two, I guess.
Did he come to those meetings? Was he a part of that group?
Yes, he came to not the small executive meetings, but to the larger group meetings. Yes, he was frequently there, always being brought by one or another friend of his.
Did he drive? He has a truck there in his yard.
I have never seen Coy drive anything, maybe other than a tractor. I'm not sure he ever owned a vehicle. I think he has always relied upon friends.
Who were some of the friends that he came with?
Oh boy. I imagine that he might have come from time to time with a tear, but the guy who brought him most frequently, I'm trying to dredge up his name, and I can't quite do it. The name Fred or Freddy sticks in my mind, but
gosh, I can't. I think it might be an in-law kind of relative, but I'm not sure.
He's very fond of you. Now, how did your relationship develop over the years? What was the common interest, or what did you?
Well, I guess a lot of us were concerned for Coy. We knew he lived alone in that rambly old house that his parents had lived in. And he tended a little farm and garden. I guess his whole tract was, 15 or 20 acres, not large. He had some chickens. He raised turnip greens and things like that. And, I always wondered how he made it, but he puttered along and seemed to always be doing fine with very little. And he was, in a quaint way, always a very likable, cheerful kind of guy. And so everybody liked him, and I guess it was just natural to be quite concerned about what the reservoir was going to do to him, because it was going to take virtually all his land.
Did you know his mother?
No, I didn't. I never met her. I think that shortly after this controversy erupted, she passed away, and Coy always said that she died worrying about the reservoir. It killed her, he said.
Yes, he was quite adamant, about how upsetting it was to her. Do you think if his mother had lived, he would have stayed right there? Would he have fought longer?
Not having known her and how willful and stubborn she might have been, I don't know. If she had been a willful and stubborn person, then she might have wanted to stay, and Coy might have stuck it out with her.
Well, I don't know. I didn't get, because I was following up on the mill and more about the history, I didn't get to ask him specifically, what were the pressures, or what brought him to the point where he decided to sell? I think he sold in, he said, April of 1980 is when he left. That's more than 5 years ago now, early on, or in the middle, at least, from where we are now from the beginning. What caused him to change his mind?
Well, I imagine that periodically somebody from Owosso would come out and sit him down and talk to him about selling out, maybe offering this and that and the other, talking about whether they were going to tear down the house or move the house or whatever. And Coy probably found all this very unsettling and worrisome to have this thing constantly brought up. I think that Owosso probably considered his tract, along with the Stanford tract, as being the linchpins or the keys. Get hold of these and everybody else and just come tumbling down. So I think he was bothered more by Owosso land buyers. And just naturally being in the position that he was in, owning land where he did, he knew that if the reservoir actually went through, that 90% of his tract was going to be underwater. And, you know, that's the only place he had known his entire life. And it had to be terribly worrisome. And the story that he always told me was he got to the point where the aggravation and the worry of it all was just more than he could stand, and he wanted to get out of it.
At one point, he did talk about, actually tied it a little bit to his mother and something she had said earlier, and then he kind of superimposed it upon himself and said that it was keeping him awake.
Yeah.
Nights he would find he was just up in the middle of the night just constantly thinking about it, and he couldn't seem to get away from it. And I suppose with no one else there in the house,
right,
to talk to her, everything becomes bigger when you're alone and trying to figure these things out.
That's exactly what he told me.
What, the Stanfords, had they already sold out?
No, this was before the Stanfords.
Oh, so he, I didn't ask him that. He just mentioned that he and the Stanfords had sold out, but he didn't say which came first. I failed to pursue that. They adjoined his land?
Yes, he is downstream of, no, they are downstream of him. And when he decided to sell, and the word got out into the community, there was a mixed reaction. I think most people were sympathetic. They knew the pressure that he had been under, that it was really getting to him, and were sympathetic. But there were a few people who felt he was being a traitor to the cause and was selling out, doing it for the money. I later on checked out all the land sale figures, so I know what he got for his land and how what others got. And I would say that he didn't do it for the money. If he had held on a few more years, he would have gotten considerably more than he did.
I hear the prices are fairly high, or were though, lately, at least in the last year.
Yeah, I believe Coy was getting somewhere in the neighborhood of $2,000. An acre, and when that includes a house and a few outbuildings, you know, it's not all that much. And more lately, the values have been running $3,000 to $3,500.
The top figure I heard somewhere, I guess, when we've been working on this, came up to about that.
Yeah.
The Stanfords followed him out.
Yes.
And they were downstream. Now that's where the dam seems to be. That's where the dam itself was going to be, right in that area.
On the Stanford land, yes.
And so, now they've put a temporary dam in up above it.
Temporary dam is considerably upstream.
Mm-hmm.
It was put in to guard against the contingency of a really dry summer and fall. The town primarily resides, primarily depends upon University Lake, but they have a rock quarry, which has a good deal of water in it. And they have a pipeline to Hillsboro and one over to Durham. So they really have a lot of resources, but I guess their thinking was that in the real crunch, Durham would have a water shortage, and Hillsboro would have a water shortage, and couldn't afford to send water down, and they might be in trouble. So they spent roughly $1 million on a temporary dam.
In some of the discussions that have been going on within our group, there is rumor, put it that way, that the dam, the original dam site down where Coy Armstrong's family, you know, where he lived, may not be good enough for a dam, and they may never, you know, it may never flood or what have you.
Well, it is true that a site was targeted for a dam as far back as 1968 by an engineering firm, and they targeted it almost entirely on the basis of topography. That is, here was a place where two hillsides came together, and there was, dividing them was the creek. Fairly steep hillsides. And then upstream from there, it opened out. So it was an ideal place for a dam. But there are other considerations, too. You need to know about where the bedrock is and what kind of soil you have and all of that. And the story that I pieced together is that when they acquired the land, finally, and started doing test borings, they did not find the kind of red clay or mixture of clay and gravel that they had anticipated, which means that they may not have nearby on that site the kind of fill material that they need to make a dam with.
We're talking about earthen dam?
This is earthen dam.
Not
right.
Putting concrete and supports mm-hmm. or anything.
Now, nobody much anymore builds big concrete dams. Mm-hmm. This is going to be one that might be 100 yards long and 80 feet from top to bottom and quite thick at the base.
It looks like now it's a possibility that land may, where Coy Armstrong's land and farm would never be flooded.
I doubt that that's true. I think it would be more accurate to say that it's going to wind up being more expensive to put it there. They'll simply have to truck the stuff in from some other source. And that might, you know, that might double the cost of the dam. But I think Owosso is adamantly committed to putting a dam on that site. They're going to do so with it. Damn the cost.
I'm wondering what running the whole controversy out, it's almost like it's now not even what's best or what's most reasonable or anything else. It's like we're going to do it to you anyway because you dragged mm-hmm. your feet and make you look like, you know, and just kind of a revenge type thing. It's turning
well,
into more than anything else. I guess that's a little.
Well, I think if you looked at it from Owosso's point of view, it would look very strange if after, 8 years of fierce fighting and a lot of expense, they finally decided that they didn't want to put a dam there. That would be like admitting they'd been wrong all the time and not about to do that.
God forbid they should do that. We must save face at all costs.
Absolutely. Bureaucracies and organizations have faces, too, that need to be saved.
Coy Armstrong doesn't have anything good to say about government. He throws a little bit of everything in it. Do you see that as a direct result of his running into this kind of a controversy and the taking of his land, or do you think that it goes farther back than that? Has he ever said anything to you that would lead you to think that it was something farther back, or is this an attitude he's developed since the controversy started?
Well, let me tell you a tale I heard, and you'll have to check with Coy to see if this is true. But somebody once told me that his family moved down to this area from the mountains, and that they had been driven out of the mountains because their land had been taken to build a reservoir. So if that is true, there may be not a grain of truth to that. But if it is true, then I can understand his antipathy to government.
I certainly will follow that up when I'm talking to him. I talked to him, he was born in Wilkes County and moved very young to Surrey County, and he lived there until he was 8. And then they moved down in 1922, but he didn't give me any background as to why. He said that the mill was available and a Mr. Reynolds needed someone to operate the mill and was selling the mill. So his father and grandfather came down and in 22, and they only operated it for about 3 years until 1925. He talked at length about a very hard drought in 25, which dried up everything, and the mill just never did much after that. They didn't there were some freshets after that in the springs that took the dam out and above it, and then they just sold the parts of the mill off.
Well, that's probably typical for mills at that time. The mill where I live went out of operation in 1930 at the death of a miller, and there was nobody to take on the mill after that. But mills, I guess, all over the countryside were, that is, water-powered mills, were going out because of that problem of, you know, what do you do during a drought? You can't grind. And people were building as far back as maybe the 1890s, were building steam-powered mills. And they could operate anytime. I have a map up here.
Do I? Maybe I took it wrong.
It's the old Tate map of Orange County. It's a section of it. It's our part of the county.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see on it, it dates from about 1895.
Okay.
It has the mills on it. And some of them you can see are obviously grist mills because they're right there on a creek, and there are others that are not anywhere on a creek, and they're shown as a little factory-like thing with a big smokestack and smoke coming out of it.
Steam-powered
mills. Yeah. So they put all the grist mills, the water-powered mills, out of business.
His words say grist and flour mill run by, he said, a 12-foot wheel. And he talked about the mill race that came through, but it was a steel wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And that parts from the mill, the steel wheel and others, were sold for scrap. What about the mill? Yours was Thompson's Mill, is that what it's known at, that site?
Yeah.
Where, so you have some property then down along on the creek, or don't you own it anymore?
My mill is on a tributary called Turkey Hill Creek. And the mill sat maybe a couple of hundred yards upstream from Cane Creek on Turkey Hill Creek. And it started, as far as I can tell, in 1813. And the Thompson family acquired it in the 1830s maybe. And it became a part of a huge plantation of 1,000 acres.
Was this the Thompson Plantation or maybe something?
It was known as Rock Spring. And there was a mill. There was a general store, blacksmith shop, miller's house. I guess there was a post office either there or very close by. So it was a little community. And I guess it just all deteriorated, and buildings were abandoned, and probably around 1930, nobody lived there anymore. And the story I get was that the mill itself was dismantled by people in the neighborhood who wanted good timber. So when I got there and bought it in 68 or 69, the rock work was there. There was and a few chimneys, but nothing wooden was left.
What about the millstones? Any sight or any, do you know anything about
what
happened?
Yeah, there's at least one grindstone there.
The
lying in the foundation.
The set or the bottom one then that's lying in the foundation, usually the top one was the one that did the moving around. It's just usually they're what they call a run of stone is two stone, one on top
right.
of the other. So is this a run or is this just the bottom?
Well, I'm not skillful enough to know. There is a stone there that has originally had grooves cut into it. And I don't know whether it was the top or the bottom one that was like that.
When it gets quite cold, may I come out sometime and get on and take a look at it? Like
sure.
To get some pictures of the sites and whatever. Rachel Best did a painting of Armstrong's grist mill, apparently just from Coy's description of it. And that particular picture, have you seen pictures around of any of the mills? Or who might have pictures of the mills that were down
on the creek? I asked around the neighborhood about a picture of my mill and I had no luck. You can find pictures of other things like churches and schools and such, but as far as I know, nobody ever took a picture of my mill.
Coy had some interesting pictures he showed me and talked to me about them, and they're in the tape here. I didn't at the time. I would like possibly if you're out there or we could at some time go together. He has some marvelous pictures, nothing with anything on the backs of them. He knows who they are and what's going on, and he told me that since no one came and asked him in his family and what have you, then he didn't think they were interested. He wasn't going to bother putting the names on. He'd tell them who they were so they could remember, just like he remembers who they are because someone told him. But I would like to see if possibly we could at least have them negatives made, in copies,
sure,
with the information on them and deposited with North Carolina Collection.
There are a bunch of pictures out there in that community. Some of them are very nice. They're 8x10s, black and whites, and by now brown and whites.
Right.
And they're good pictures, highly detailed. And there are still folks out there who remember who those people are. I have taken pictures with a macro lens of some of these. I didn't know Coy had it.
Well, I'm not, like, the dam and the site, there are people in them, but the dam and the rest of it is in mm-hmm. the back. And, of course, I'm interested also not in the people. And there's a tobacco barn raising and some other things done with some the marvelous faces, on these people. And
right.
they're in such small photographs, I'd like to have the negatives made and then blow them up later.
I suppose he doesn't have the negatives.
No, he just seemed to have this box of pictures and things, and possibly, I don't want to pressure him in any way, to run right out there and demand that we have them, and I would like to get to know him more, and hope that his confidence in me,
mm-hmm.
caring for something like that, I also would like to get some pictures of things that his great-grandmother made bedspreads. He's very fond, he talks very fondly of her and of his ancestors. And this is mainly my focus in the area
mm-hmm.
anyway. My historical bent tends to be farther back than the current.
Mm-hmm.
There seem to be more than enough people who are interested in current whys and wherefores and the arguments for and against and the philosophy of history and this type of thing. I'm more interested in the people and who they were and just producing the information so that maybe someone else will have something to work with.
Absolutely.
I don't draw a lot of conclusions from my head. I just get a great deal of satisfaction from just talking to people and listening to his opinions and his own versions. I want to talk to him more about his family, his early family. I would like to follow up on the mills and some of that out there and gain some pictures and things. And I've put my name and address and my telephone number on the front of the part of the interview there. I will stop back in a week or so. I'm sure you're very busy. If you don't have time, that's okay too. But somewhere, contact you again. Okay. And hopefully my tapes and things, I'll have the rest of the interview
mm-hmm.
done, because I would like you to take a look at it. Because I would like very much for him to sign the release form so that the tape and the interview can be filed with the oral history program. Otherwise, they can't be
yes.
without that. So that I suggested that, he said that an awful lot of people had come through and talked to him about this, and he had been repeating these things, and I said, well, that's one way. If for some reason you chose not to discuss this, you could always send them down to the North Carolina Collection, and you could say
right.
it's already been there, and you could listen to me say my piece.
Coy has, during this whole controversy, as he said, a lot of people have come out interested in the whole thing, and Coy has been one of the favorite people for them to talk to. I suppose it's just because he's the kind of person he is. He's colorful and expresses himself in a quaint way, and he's very friendly.
He's very deft, though, in his very astute in his observations
mm-hmm.
in looking through things in here. There are places where he's rambling with colorful things, but he always seems to end it with just that one little sentence. He has such a certain economy of words when it comes to really making a point, you know, breaking it down into. Well, thank you very much. Unless there's something particular that you had thought of that I had skipped over, or any particular story about him. Is there one in particular that you remember, or something he was involved in that?
Nothing springs to mind right now, but boy, I really have some pleasant memories of dropping over to his place from time to time, maybe on a weekend day, and he'd sit me down in his kitchen and get out the cornmeal and make up a batch of cornbread sticks. We'd sit in his back room kitchen around the table and just talk on and on. That was very pleasant.
He's so fastidious about himself and his home, the trailer he's in now. I was very aware of that when I went in. It seemed to be traits that he suggests he picked up from his mother. He said you couldn't be around a woman like that, you know, and not pick up those traits. That he does his canning and his cooking and takes care of himself. He has those skills. And what a self-contained person who enjoys people. He enjoys people,
and I think people enjoy him. And very frequently, when I would go by his house, or sometimes stop by and talk to him, other people would be there, or they'd be coming and going all the time. I never worried about his being a lonely old man stuck away alone in a house on down near the creek. He always had people around.
Have you ever met his brother or his sister? I didn't know.
I think I have met his brother.